Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Wants to be involved in the process. What type of candidates do you expect yourself to attract? And so I've tried to be real with these fans, and they thought I'm the biggest hater, whatnot, whatever. I'm cool with it. But those guys I listed are realistic options that I like in the moment. I would like to see Kenny Dillingham get a shot. I think even though he's an Arizona State guy, and that's where, I mean, his roots are, that's where he wants to be. I think just from listening to his interviews, listening how he turned that program around to a playoff team in last year and with the talent he's had, I think if you can get him to LSU and then with the possibility of Sam Levitt, those rumors of him hitting the transfer portal and trying to demand more money, I think he's a good option. But any one of those options I think is realistic, not a pipe dream.
But you think Lane's off the table?
Yeah, I just – it's – you know, LSU fans might hate me for this, but – I just right now, Gabe, as we talk about it, LSU is not a better football job than Ole Miss as we speak right now.
Mm. Okay.
You know, there's just from a contender standpoint, Ole Miss is set up right now for this season, the next season, and possibly the season after this, depending on if Kewon Lacy wants to leave early, which he probably will.
Yeah.
But you got a young quarterback backing up Trinidad who was the starter at first. You know, they're set up for success for the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And LSU's in a rebuild situation where you can't fix LSU situations in an offseason by hitting the portal and hitting NIL. It just doesn't work like that. And I just think when people are going to hate LSU fans particularly, Ole Miss is a better job right now for Lane Kiffin than LSU.
We'll see what he does. It's been sitting here in Memphis talking about it every day, it's been a ride for sure. I did say if Lane Kiffin if there was ever a moment for him to act less like Lane Kiffin, it would be right now. But he's going to do his same thing, man. He's going to troll online, say what he wants to say.
And it's crazy, and it drives me crazy how just LSU fans are just like on 100 right now. And I'm like, look, you guys got to know who you're dealing with. This is Lane Kiffin. Like, this isn't Kyle Whittingham. This isn't Mike Gundy, right? This isn't James Franklin. This is Lane Kiffin. I mean, the guy lives off internet trolling. Like,
yes, and listen, we talk about, you know, athletes and coaches, like, he likes attention. We don't have to hide that fact.
Oh yeah, I mean, the guy took off his belt in a post-game presser last week and gave his belt to Kewon Lacy.
Right. Yes, he lives for that stuff. So yeah, like, I get the sense that he would go to Florida over LSU, as strange as that sounds.
But you know
it's a Steve Spurrier thing. It's the he's always sort of found his way back to that state. He knows that state really well, has lived there before. So, like, that makes more sense to me. I feel like what the LSU interest is going to do for him in turn is drive up the price wherever he ends up.
That's all it is, man. It's all the smoke of agents and trying to get your guy the right value. And sometimes, and personally with me, I think a lot of it is just Lane Kiffin just wanting to let everybody know that I'm tired of the Kirby talk. I'm tired of the Ryan Day talk.
Right.
I'm Lane Kiffin. I'm the best in college football right now.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Braden, great stuff as always. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, appreciate you, brother. Thank you, man.
Yes, sir. He is Braden Fehoko, 2019 national champion at LSU. Go follow him on YouTube or subscribe to him on YouTube. Just type in Braden Fehoko into the search bar. He's got his NFL videos up there, and then follow him on X at Braden Fehoko. That was an interesting take from an LSU guy. To say that Ole Miss is a better job at the moment than LSU. But, like, when you're taking a job, I don't know if you are thinking right now, first 2 years. I think you're thinking more long term, right? If you're a guy like Lane Kiffin. But I get what he's saying in the sense that the roster structure for both of those programs right now, Ole Miss's roster for sure in a better situation than LSU's. I get his sentiment, but that's interesting to hear from an LSU guy. Don't think he's going to make a lot of, you know, all those LSU fans, if they hear that out there. I don't know if they'll take that too kindly, but hey, it is what it is. Let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll talk to my guy David Cobb from CBS Sports. David Cobb writes and reports on college football and college basketball for CBS Sports. He's on X at David W. Cobb, but he's also a role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, and then tomorrow, Thursday, with Jeffrey Wright and company. David, how's it going?
Hey, man, it's going all right. How are you?
I am doing well. Before we get into the college football playoff rankings, I just wanted to take a moment to sort of hop into what we saw last night in the Champions Classic in college basketball. Michigan State, Tom Izzo, like, he's the ageless wonder. I can't understand how he continues to do what he does. Because I saw the reports of, like, the money that was spent on his opponent last night, Kentucky's roster versus his. It's being estimated that Kentucky spent $22 million to his $3.5 million. Now, maybe it's a little bit higher than that. I'm not totally sure, but that's the number that I have heard from multiple people. Yet they beat him by 17, Michigan State did, number 17 team in the country. That guy, it's ridiculous. He just doesn't stop.
No doubt, he is the exception because, yeah, you look at that roster. You put this Michigan State roster with any other coach in college basketball, and to be honest, I'm not sure it's an NCAA tournament.
Right.
They don't have five-star guys running up and down the floor. They don't have a boatload of NBA prospects on that team. They don't have probably an All-American on that team. And yet it's an operation where the sum is greater than the whole of the parts or however that saying goes, right? Like it's a real team, and that's what he excels in building. And a lot of times we don't see Michigan State looking this good this early too. That's a bit of a plot twist. A lot of times they are building in into February and March and then play the best basketball late. But they looked like a well-oiled machine last night. And then on the other side of that.
Yeah, no, Kentucky, it's not great. They've lost 8 of their last 11 against ranked opponents. And they spent $22 million on that roster. And I don't think Mark Pope was bad in year one. But it has not been a good start to year two. And then he had his, I don't even want to call it a plea or whatever it was last night at the podium where he said, we've failed up until this point, but we won't fail this year. I mean, I don't really know what his message was, but he tried to give one.
Yeah, it sounds like he's trying to get out in front of the angry mob in Kentucky. It kind of sounds like he's sort of just casting this aura of doom and gloom, like before the fan base has even gotten there. And it's like, well, geez, you know, you don't even have Kentucky fans with their pitchforks out just yet, for the most part. And he's already out here talking like a defeated man when they've got 90% of their season left. But the issue for Kentucky right now, it all hinges on whether their point guard, Jalen Lowe, is going to need surgery or not on his shoulder. And this is the second year in a row they've had a point guard with shoulder issues. And then the other part of it is Jaden Quaintance going to be a huge interior presence rim protector for them. And he's been out with a knee injury and is expected to come back at some point. Even still, though, even without those guys, you're still talking about a roster that's you know significantly more expensive than Michigan State's, and you just look disjointed and out of sync and hadn't looked good yet, and you play a brutal schedule. And so, you know, the good thing for Kentucky though, is they'll have plenty of chances. I mean, the SEC, for as down as it may be right now here in these first few weeks, you're still going to get your chances to go out and get marquee wins in that league. So I think they will be fine, but it doesn't look very good right now.
All right. Now, I promised you we were going to talk about Memphis. Obviously, last time out, they had the 14-point loss to UNLV on their home floor. Are they going to be okay? I think I know your answer. I think you've been pretty consistent with this, even when they were playing exhibition games or even pre-exhibition games. You were very hesitant to you know crown them or give them you know passing grades. But after that loss against UNLV, how do you feel?
No, the evidence is mounting. When you go back and you include the exhibition slate. And then you include the UNLV loss, and I mean, I think you could look at the defense and the Ole Miss loss too, and say that was a real issue. I mean, it was a real issue in that loss. I mean, on the one hand, you want to say, oh, well, we only lost by six on the road against the Sweet 16 team, but you really couldn't stop anybody, and that's been a recurring issue now. You had 100 hung on you by the two SEC teams you played in the exhibition slate, and then you know UNLV with Josh Fastner, who's not even shown to be a good team this year, walks into your building and puts 90-plus on you. So I'm really concerned about this Memphis team. I'll say this, though, and I've been consistent with this as well. I don't think it's hopeless because it's the American, and this is where you're glad you're in the American, because if you were in a power league with this team right now, you'd be going towards a disaster really, really, really fast. I mean, this would be a bottom of the barrel team in any of the major conferences. Maybe it could be competitive in the Big East, but you put this Memphis basketball team right now in the SEC, the Big 10 or the Big 12, they'd get their brains beat in every single night. And that's just the sad truth of the matter. But since they are in the American, I mean, thank goodness they are. And I know not many people ever say that or think that. And maybe because they're in the American is part of the reason why they don't have a more expensive roster. And I get all that. But being in the American is going to give this team a chance. Because, I mean, starting with this Purdue game, you know, tomorrow, it's going to get harder before it gets any easier, but eventually there's a light at the end of the tunnel because you're going to be playing AAC teams, and there you can build an identity, and you just got to hang on until then and sort out your rotations, figure out who you can trust. It might look really ugly by the time Christmas rolls around in terms of the win-loss record, but if you can just keep eight or nine guys somewhat engaged, yeah, then I think, you know, I think they'll have a chance in the American to turn it around.
And I know they have more than one problem, but there's one problem I think is bigger than all of them. I think it's the Aaron Bradshaw problem. He's been bad in the exhibition games in these first three games of the year. And to be honest with you, when I watch him play, I don't see it at all. Like I think he's borderline unplayable.
Yeah, you're right. He is. And it's a sad sort of miscalculation, like a big scouting whiff when you get a five-star prospect who begins his career at Kentucky and, you know, and then he gets to his third stop and he's actually maybe regressing. And I don't think you can necessarily like put that on the Memphis staff, but I mean, sure. I mean, maybe to a certain extent, the evaluation, and I don't know what chunk of the budget he took up.
I think he was about, you know, there was Doug McDaniel, then there was him, probably the second highest paid player right on that team.
Yeah, that's a problem. Okay, but if you want to look at the positive, man, I didn't really think that they would get a whole lot from Simon Majak.
Yeah, he was fun. He's
fun. I think he can play. I think he can play. I'm serious. Like, you watch him, the fluidness as an athlete. He's not afraid of the physicality, which is kind of a big surprise when you're playing at a lower tier of international ball, and then you come over to college basketball, and the pace and the bruising nature of it doesn't seem to faze you at all. Like, I really think that he could be an actual player, like way more so than I originally thought. I mean, I think he could be in some ways maybe what you hoped Aaron Bradshaw would be.
Yeah, and, you know, Julius Thedford, he's a solid player as well as a sophomore.
Well, that's the thing. Is like there are little glimmers of hope here on this team. Like, but it's just not necessarily exactly what you thought it would be or who you thought it would be because – you know, for example, like Tariq Ingraham, I thought he would be a guy that would be in the rotation and would pop a little bit more than he has.
He's a bit out of shape though, from what I understand. He was sitting down waiting for that waiver to get signed.
Yeah, hard to stay motivated when you don't know if you're playing or not. I get it, but no, I think there are bright spots. I think it's a matter of nailing down the rotation, sort of figuring out what works and. Just again, like it's a little weird with this whole thing about how they didn't install the offense until basically the week before the season. I mean, that doesn't really add up. Some of the miscalculations and who to play, when play. Honestly, there's a little bit of a Kentucky vibe here where you've got a lot of talented players, but Mark Pope, Penny Hardaway, sure they're not the only ones, but both of them seem to really be struggling with how to deploy the best rotations. And so that's obviously a significant issue. And I don't know I don't know what to think about this Purdue matchup tomorrow, because as much as I just praise Simon Mahawk, I mean, my gosh, you got to go up against Trey Kaufman Wren and Daniel Jacobson and Oscar Clough. I mean, that is an absolute nightmare.
Okay, well, David, I know what to think about it. I'm just not going to say it. Let's go ahead and move on to college football at this moment. College football playoff rankings were released last night. Very similar top five, but of course Alabama took the loss, so they're out. It's going Ohio State, Indiana, A&M, Georgia, and then Texas Tech at number five, Ole Miss at number six. I think it's kind of funny to see reactions, right? Because I sort of figured with what happened last weekend, we would get a lot of people complaining about the outcome of the college football playoff committee and how they saw this thing. But, you know, you'll see people say, well, they're inconsistent. They have inconsistent application. I didn't see it that way last night. What I saw was a consistent application of the wrong ideology. They're going after losses. They're weighing losses. Who had the better losses? I at some point in some of these comparisons, you have to talk about wins. The one problem, the biggest problem I have, it's not Miami with the head-to-head win over Notre Dame being ranked below them. The problem I have is Alabama being ranked below Notre Dame. I find that to be egregious, considering Alabama has four top 25 wins. According to this week's poll, Notre Dame has one. And, you know, when we're talking about where Alabama was pre this week, for the first 2 weeks of the college football playoff ranking, the committee knew they had that loss against Florida State. They were still number four. But when you add a loss against the number eight team in this week's poll in Oklahoma, somehow that compounds to drop them six spots and below Notre Dame. I just found that to be egregious and nasty by the committee.
I tend to agree, because they're really working hard to make that season opening loss to Florida State just kill Alabama. I mean, it's just killing Alabama right now.
But they didn't until this week. You know, it felt like it didn't matter until they lost to Oklahoma.
I'm just saying, like, that's the hook they're using. That's their justification. If it's not that, then what is it? I mean, as you mentioned, the number of quality victories that Alabama has is a bar above and beyond what Notre Dame brings to the table. And so, again, the only thing they can really be looking at with Alabama to drop them below Notre Dame is that season opening loss to Florida State. Was it a bad loss? Absolutely. But I think more than made up for that with a win over Georgia, a win over Tennessee. I mean, your other loss is to an Oklahoma team that is above Notre Dame. I agree. I think that's a miscalculation. I think the whole Notre Dame thing in general is really interesting. I think they started off with Notre Dame maybe a little bit too high, and now what do you do with them? Is it possible that if Alabama beats Auburn that you move Alabama back ahead of Notre Dame? Is it possible that BYU could jump Notre Dame if they finish the regular season at 11-1? I would hope both of those things are still very much on the table. And for that matter, I mean, what about Miami? They keep saying, you saw your check last night. He would basically said, if they get to a point where they're being judged against each other in the same group of teams, that the head-to-head will start to factor in. So Notre Dame's too high right now, but I'm really curious to see if they're moved down at all. And I think it has a massive sort of betting impact on the way you perceive some of these matchups in the weeks ahead, because there's a lot of teams out there that are going to feel the need to accumulate style points, and Notre Dame included. And so, I mean, if you're looking at a Notre Dame spread, you know, I mean, I'm thinking you take Notre Dame, because what are they, 34, 35 against Syracuse? I mean, I think they're going to go try to win that game by 45 points just to show the committee that, like, hey, we're so much better than we were in the first couple weeks of the season.
Yeah, there's a lot of reasons that I do not jive with the idea that Miami should be ahead of Notre Dame right now, even with the head-to-head win. Obviously, it has to do with the two losses that Miami had in a three-week span to unranked opponents, whereas Notre Dame's losses are versus 13-3. Also, I do think there's something to be said about it was a three-point win with a late field goal, week one of the season with a freshman quarterback that has been really good since in C.J. Carr. You know, so like that means something to me. But, you know, I wanted to just dive into some metrics, and I did a little deep dive last night into just about everything I could see from a ranking perspective and how these multiple metrics see the Miami-Notre Dame dilemma that people seem to have a massive problem with. And what I found, I looked at Sagrin, I looked at Massey, I looked at AP, I looked at coaches, I looked at the old BCS simulation, what it would look like.
Wow.
What's interesting about it is everyone has this problem. They think Miami should be ranked ahead of Notre Dame because of the head-to-head win. But every single last ranking, strength of record I looked at as well, every single last one of those metrics has Notre Dame ahead of Miami. And what I would ask the people that hold that opinion is, why is that?
It's got to be the quality of Notre Dame's losses. I mean, that's got to be what it is, right? And, I mean, if you watch, they do look like a better team. Miami's losses are a lot worse. Miami's losses to SMU and Louisville are, I mean, kind of inexcusable. Those are not.
Although they're not bad teams, and I do, you know, when Miami fans say they're 2-7-3 teams, I do jive with that line of thinking. But they also aren't the number 3-13 teams in the country.
Not at all. Not by any stretch. So I think it's probably the toughest decision this committee will face. I think a lot of this stuff will sort itself out. I mean, it's possible you could end up leaving a 2-loss SEC team on the wrong side of this thing. I mean, I realize there are some potential complications there, but I really do believe the Notre Dame Miami dilemma, if you will, could be the most complicated question. And because I don't think Miami is going to lose either of its final two games. I don't think that Notre Dame is going to lose either of its final two games. And then you have to figure out how to evaluate them. And the two early season losses for Notre Dame are holding up well, if that makes any sense. But
right.
Again, it's like you have a head-to-head result. I mean, and so, yeah, Notre Dame has gotten better and improved, but let's just pretend they played at the end of the season instead of the beginning. How would that influence the ranking, right? If they played in the last game of the season and Miami beat Notre Dame and they ended up going into Selection Sunday, both at 10-2, Miami would be ahead of Notre Dame. So I'm kind of like of the opinion that even though they played in week one, it still counts. It should still matter. And sure, like Notre Dame played a freshman quarterback. That was their choice. I mean, he played well, but they could have gone out and gotten a veteran from the portal if they had wanted to. They didn't do that. And they knew that they had two brutal games to start the season. And then also the whole strength of schedule metric here that we're looking at. I know you said for now anyway that Notre Dame's got a better strength of record. But I don't think that excuses the weak, like just
sure,
really, really poor schedule that Notre Dame put together. I mean, I know some of that's years out in advance and you can't help that some of these teams stink, but I mean, come on, seriously, you look at this slate, who on here other than Miami and Texas A&M was supposed to be any good? So in some ways, like if they get left out, they made their own bed by putting together a really bad schedule.
Now, final thing, I just want to pick your brain on this because I feel like I am falling into the same potential trap that I fell into last year. But outside of Ohio State, leave them out of the question for this question in particular. Who's the most dangerous team outside of Ohio State in the country?
Yeah, I'm starting to believe it might be Georgia.
See, that's what I think, but I did that last year, and they bowed out early to Notre Dame.
It's different this year, Gabe.
Okay.
Georgia's different, believe me. They're different. That offense, Mike Bobo is, I think, coaching. He's calling the best plays of his life right now. He is dialed in with that Georgia, and it's all facets right now with the Georgia offense, the deep ball, the intermediate stuff. Gunnar Stockton's playing some of the best. He's the best quarterback right now that I've seen. I mean, he's playing better, I think, than Stetson Bennett played.
When
because look, you got to remember those Georgia teams that won the title with Bennett at quarterback, they did it largely on the back of their defense, and Georgia's defense is improving, but it's not nearly to the level of those 21 and 22 teams. And Gunnar Stockton, he's number one in my quarterback power rankings this week, but they're also running the football well. They've surrounded him with better weapons than Carson Beck had last year. It's all clicking. It's all clicking right now for that Georgia offense, and their defense is improving. They're actually starting to generate a pass rush, and they're actually starting to really be nasty against the run as well. So there's a lot. Oh, and boy, Kirby. I mean, Kirby
yes,
is on another level right
now. He showed me all I needed to know when he went for the surprise onside up 11. I mean, that's the Kirby I know and love.
But yes, and I think that's a reflection of the fact that he likes his team. I think he likes his team. I think he likes their makeup. I think that he likes what they're about. And again, a lot of that goes back to the quarterback and Stockton. And, you know, like you could say Carson Beck got a bad rap at Georgia. Maybe he did. He had some crap receivers last year, no doubt. But I don't think you could sit here and argue with a straight face that Gunnar Stockton isn't the upgrade they needed, both in terms of on-field performance and in terms of the leadership aspect of it. So I think they're in a really good spot right now, man. And I like Texas A&M's best, but I really don't like their worst. I mean, they're going to get beat because at some point they're going to put together a terrible half in a first or second round college
football
playoff.
See this past weekend.
Yeah, it's going to get them beat. So, like, I think their best is as good as Ohio State's best. I genuinely believe that. It's just they have a much lower floor than any of these other contending teams.
Yeah, they really did show them both last weekend, didn't they? That first half was as bad a football as I've seen in the SEC from any particular team this year. Second half was the best. I mean, Marcel Reed was dialed in. I didn't even know he had that in him, to be honest with you.
Well, it's almost like he set himself up to like have the Heisman moment. You know, he's like, right. Oh yeah, I'm just going to dig myself a hole here so I can be the hero. Cause he went from being, I mean, just some of the worst quarterback play I've seen from anyone all season to genuinely look like he should win the Heisman in the span of one half.
Well, and it was crazy. It's such a talent too for quarterbacks to just forget about how they played in the first half. And like, he didn't show any of that in the second half. That amazed me. Like, some of that stink usually stays on in the midst of a game.
You would think so. You would think so. But he flipped the switch, man. You know, he's been a little bit erratic, a little bit turnover prone, but like, he's also great at avoiding sacks. He's not afraid. Like, that's the thing. It's like, he'll step up in the pocket and keep his eyes like darting between multiple different receivers moving downfield. He just like keeps plays alive. Like, the window for Marcel Reed making a play feels like it's about a second and a half longer than it is for almost any other quarterback, because when he moves up in the pocket, he's not just looking for the escape hatch or trying to throw it away or scramble for 4 yards and slide. He's always got his eyes downfield and looking for that open receiver. And sometimes he makes bad decisions in those moments, but a lot of times it works out well.
For sure. Well, David, you the man. We will talk again on Friday.
All right, man. Sounds good.
Yes, sir. He's David Cobb at David W. Cobb on X, college basketball, college football for CBS Sports. Role player here at 92.9 FM ESPN Monday, Wednesday, Friday on the Gabe Kuhn Show, Thursdays with Jeffrey Wright and company. Now, let's go ahead and grab a break on that note. When we come back, we'll take a trip around the National Football League, let you know all the news and notes that you need before we head into Thursday night football and all.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Ultimately, to the NFL weekend. We are back in on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. It's time to take a trip around the National Football League. Connor, hit it. We're starting here. A couple of things. One, Ja'Marr Chase, as we all expected, his suspension is going to be upheld. Did you see who it was upheld by the way?
I did not.
Jordy Nelson. Jordy Nelson, former Green Bay Packers wide receiver. An absolute stud was the guy who ended up holding up this suspension. But it makes sense. He spit in the face of Jalen Ramsey. He deserves a suspension. He will miss the game against the Patriots coming up this weekend. He is forfeiting $507,156. That's how much he's forfeiting for this week worth of salary. But it's kind of interesting. I think I get why he appealed now. Because Joe Burrow was a full practice participant. And I guess he wanted to be on the field with Joe. But you know what I would say to the Bengals and for Joe Burrow? I know that you may feel like you can make some late run, push for a wild card spot, but I don't see the reason to put Joe Burrow back in there for the year. I just don't get it. I don't do it. It doesn't seem like the risk versus reward. The risk far outweighs the reward. You're 3-7. You're not going to make some miraculous run, especially with Ja'Marr Chase out in a game against the Patriots. I, I don't know. They need to tread a little more light with this Joe Burrow thing. Joe Burrow also needs to think about what's best for his career going forward. He's a guy who struggles to stay on the field. And in a 3-7 loss season, I don't think it's smart for him to get back on the field. But, hey, he's a competitor. Shedeur Sanders, officially, we know he will start this Sunday against the Raiders, which is a nice matchup. I like that. Shedeur gets he draws a nice defense to get his first start against. But he spoke to the media today, so let's see what he had to say.
I say mentally, emotionally. I know this is a trending topic that my house got broken into, but I'm in a mental space now to where, you know, it's not too much that can faze me. Honestly, what's going on? And none of my jewelry got took anyway. So it just caught slipping. It happens.
Yeah, so he got his jewelry taken yesterday. We talked about that. He also said today that he feels like he's the guy, that he believes that he is the guy to be the quarterback and win ball games for the Cleveland Browns. I wonder how long it's going to take for Rex Ryan, though, seriously, to write up a full-on rant and get on, you know, get up and let him rant away. If Mike Greenberg will let him rant
right
away.
Now, Rex has got his hands on his wife's feet, and he's brainstorming how to make this a negative about Shedeur Sanders.
Yes, and to those that think that's a negative thing for him to say, I feel like I'm the guy, I know I'm the guy, that's how everybody should feel.
Absolutely.
That's how every competitor should feel.
You know what I don't want to hear from my starting quarterback?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm good enough yet.
I don't know if I'm the guy.
Yes, exactly. So, some people will try to turn this into a negative, the arrogant type conversation, but that's not what it is at all. But I'm very much looking forward to this weekend, him suiting up, starting against the Raiders. Hey, this is tough. Now, it's a partially torn ACL, but Michael Penix Jr., starting quarterback for the Falcons, who has not had a good year, he's going to undergo season-ending surgery on his ACL. He's overcome so much already, and this is just another thing. We've seen him do it time and time again. But in 2018, when he was with Indiana, torn ACL. 2019, with Indiana, season-ending shoulder surgery. 2020, torn ACL. 2021, he had another shoulder issue. And then now in 2025, he has another season-ending knee injury that has to do with his ACL. It's been a tough go for Michael Penix, but he's overcome four, five times at this point. I don't count him out from overcoming a sixth. The Saints have released veteran wide receiver Brandon Cooks, and apparently it was a mutual decision. He asked for a release. He got a release because he was unhappy with the way he was being utilized within that Saints offense. The only thing I'd say is, Brandon, what'd you expect? What did you think was going to happen, dude? You took the money. That's fine. But, on the back end, when you have Tyler Shuck and Spencer Rattler running out there and you're not being utilized correctly, didn't you kind of have an idea that that offense and that team was going to stink? And by the way, your best ball's behind you, okay, Brandon? You're not the same player. But either way, he'll be out there for other teams to pick up for a playoff push. We'll see if he gets picked up. Now, we need to go ahead and get into my post-week 11 NFL power rankings. We'll start at number 5. All right. I have to tell you this. Just being forthright, I don't even really believe in my number 5. I'm not a buyer into my number 5. I think there's a team who I had to take off because they lost this week that is a better team than the team I put at number 5. I think the team that's better than them is the Seahawks. They would be my pseudo 6. They'd be right there on the outside. They had a 2-point loss to the Rams late in that game. 4 picks thrown by Sam Darnold. He hadn't done that so far this year. The Rams were really phenomenal in that game defensively. Thought it was a bit fluky, but I have to go with the Broncos here. 9-2, best record in the National Football League. Unbelievable defense. But that offense is going to be a problem for them. It's way too inconsistent. They're not able to move the ball on a consistent basis. Their run game sort of lags behind the norm on first and second down. Bo Nix is not what he was in his rookie year so far this year. I just need that offense to be, I don't know, marginally better that I can lift them up this list. They may be my number one team if they had some consistency offensively because their defense is nasty. They have the best pass rush in the league, bar none. Their secondary is really good, especially when they get Pat Surtain, the reigning defensive player of the year, back in that defensive backfield. They're a good team, but they're they have an they're an offense away from being great. Similar sentiments, a little bit different. Eagles, Philadelphia Eagles. I'm going Philadelphia Eagles here. Just bad vibes. They're the number one seed right now. If the season ended today in the NFC, but the AJ Brown, Jalen Hurts, missing all these throws. They can't run the ball still. Lane Johnson's now going to be out for 4 to 6 weeks. Their star all-pro right tackle. They're winning, but we can level with me, Connor. Nothing that they've done this year has been convincing. Not a thing.
No. Well, they're winning games.
But like that's
but
it.
They don't do anything like elite outside of a few
their
moments from their defense.
Has
yeah.
been good, but it's not like the Broncos defense that's been good week after week after week after week. They've picked up lately.
They do know how to win, you know.
There's something to be said about that.
There is something to be said about that.
For
they,
sure.
They fall start very well on the tush push.
Yeah, they do.
They're elite at that.
And they get away with it.
Yes.
Going with the Colts here. Good team. Good point differential. Complete. The addition of Sauce Gardner has proved to be a good one. But the team ahead of them, go ahead and get to it. The team ahead of them has something that they don't have, in my opinion. They have a quarterback that can lift up the rest of his roster. And I think that the quarterback for the Colts, Daniel Jones, gets lifted up by the rest of his roster. I like the Pats at number two. It's a really good football team. Both sides of the ball. And Drake May's deep ball is unbelievable. And he just has this intrinsic ability to lift up everyone around him. Where Daniel Jones can make good plays on schedule when everything's right. Drake May can make plays on any given down, and he plays a consistent brand, I should say, of quarterback in the National Football League. Rams. It's the Rams. You beat the Seahawks by two. You won in a different way. You got four picks against Sam Darnold. I really like the Rams. Now, all these teams are chasing a ring, and you can go chase a ring as well. Robert Irwin Jewelers has the Give Gifts to Get Gifts sale. It's going on right now. Now through Saturday, spend $19.99 or more at Robert Irwin Jewelers and get free Apple AirPods Pro 3. Great deal. You usually don't, you know, get to spend money and then get some gifts in return. They do that at Robert Irwin Jewelers. They handle you. They also have the Meant to Be Guarantee, free ring sizing for life, and, of course, free jewelry spa service for life. But it's a huge diamond sale going on right now, and this week only. All bridal jewelry is up to 50% off. Plus, you mentioned you heard me, Gabe Kuhn, and you get extra 10% off your bridal purchase. They always have great financing options, 12 months interest-free financing, or take up to 60 months to pay. Bigger, brighter diamonds, better prices. Robert Irwin Jewelers, 5 locations are online at rijewelers.com. Let's go ahead and get to small talk. And Small Talk is brought to you by Conway Services, reputable service available 7 days a week. Very, very simple topic today for Small Talk. Jaren Jackson Jr. is doubtful for tomorrow night's game against the Sacramento Kings. Like, you look at this injury list, it's just like, it's too much to handle. Ja Morant, Ty Jerome, Brandon.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcast.
Clark, Jaren Jackson Jr., and Scottie Pippen. That is five of your top 10 guys. Your two best players at that. I mean, we thought after, 2023 or 2022? We thought it would get better. It's gotten progressively worse.
I've never seen a stretch like this.
It's not a stretch.
It has been
A lifestyle.
It's an era.
it's an era. It's what it is at this point. You just have to expect it. But you know what will help you watch the Grizzlies? A bottle of Old Dominic. Go get a bottle of Old Dominic today. They have gin, they have vodka, they have toddy, they have whiskey. Always drink responsibly, of course. But if you need to find some joy within this Grizzlies season, Old Dominic will help you do that. And as we get to the holiday season, you always hear people say they'd like to spread holiday cheer. Well, Old Dominic Distillery, I promise you, they live that life. They spread holiday cheer. Not only is the spirit from Old Dominic going to bring that cheer, of course, again, always drink responsibly, but making it down to 305 South Front Street to their state-of-the-art distillery is always a great choice. Book a tour and tasting with family. Grab some holiday cheer today. And don't forget to book your holiday events. Just head to olddominic.com to learn more. They also have an event schedule. They'll have their Blue Christmas pop-ups. So just go to olddominic.com to check out all of that and get all the details. Old Dominic Distillery, come say hi. Hour number three is headed your way. And to start it off, we'll bring on my guy to talk some college football, Colton Denning.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This is Free Range with Von Miller, the podcast where I step outside the lines and I take you with me. Each week, we're talking everything from the biggest stories around the league to the biggest stories off the field. This isn't your average sports podcast. This is game meets culture, locker room meets living room, and no topic is off limits. So if you're into good conversations that ruffle a few feathers, join me every Wednesday and follow Free Range with Von Miller everywhere you get your podcasts.